You're listening to The Crime Collective.
This is a true crime podcast, so it will contain some confronting themes. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey.
Oh,
we're all
hey.
Right, I've been recording for quite some time, of course.
Sneaky.
So if Butch does the episode, who does the introducing? This has really thrown a spanner in the works.
I introduced the last itty-bitty-nitty-gritty one, so...
Well, then I guess it's my turn. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Crime Collective. My name's Ben.
My name's Claire.
I'm going to need you a little bit quicker and snappier on your responses, Claire, if you don't mind. And welcome to our well-moustached producer, Butch.
Hello. Hi. You're a slave driver with the orders.
Faster. Quicker.
Leave a little pregnant pause there.
I don't know what that's supposed to mean. I don't even know what that means. What does pregnant pause mean?
Just creates a bit of suspense, you know. You not heard that term before?
No.
News to me.
I think Butch, look at me. I think she's making that shit up.
It feels like it.
Yeah.
Besides, they're trying to get like a... just like a random saying to become a thing.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Trying to make it a thing.
This week, what a treat. Our lovely man Butch is going to have a crack at his first story. I, for one, am very much looking forward to it.
And
something weird's happening in the chat because we're doing this one online again. And we've got, you can't see it, and you never will, our camera is set up. And for some reason, while I'm talking, I'm staring at the camera and I don't know why I'm doing it. I think it's because I'm conscious of the fact that it's on.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And Butch is twirling his moustache. Yeah.
I'm distracted by the moustache twirling.
I'm distracted by the array of man boy goodness that's all around him in the background. It's very...
Ignore all this and all this stuff behind me. Ignore all that.
I wish you guys could see it. Oh, you know what? I'm actually, since I'm recording in OBS, it's recording by screens. So maybe a screen grab of you two looking fabulous. All right. Anyway, we're going to hand this over to Butchie Poodle, and he's going to give us a story. I cannot wait. Ladies and gentlemen, Le Butch.
Hello. I'm doing the Kintakaifek murders. Probably terrible pronunciation of that, but it's German, so.
And you know, we actually had a request for this one.
Oh, did we?
Did we?
Yes. So,
I did not see it, so it shows how much I pay attention.
I do not read the emails. Well, no, I do sometimes. But you always beat me to them. You're a little email ninja, Claire.
That's me. Yeah, so this one, Matt will be loving this one. So.
Okay.
Take it away, Butch.
Now I'm even more nervous.
Yeah.
This is a case from 1922, so a bit of an older one, and unsolved.
Really? I've not heard of it.
Plenty of suspects, but never a proper like conviction or anything for it.
Okay.
And unsolved. It is technically closed, I think.
Okay.
But it remains unsolved. Like no one ever got charged with it.
All right.
So it was the 31st of March, 1922. A small family, the Gruber family, on their Bavarian farmstead just north of Munich in Germany, were all six people were murdered by an unknown assailant.
Good.
So there was Andreas Gruber, 63. His wife, it has accent marks, so I have no idea what I'm supposed to do with it, but it's...
Which is
Basilia?
Yeah, just say it with a raised end at the end, so that way everyone knows you're trying, but you don't know. So Casilia was absolutely Casilia? Right.
Gruber, age 72.
Yep.
Their widowed daughter Victoria Gruber. Gabriel. Sorry, she obviously has a husband's name.
She's widowed.
Yes, she was widowed.
Okay.
Age 35. Victoria's children. One of them's also named Casilia.
Okay.
Age 7. And Josef.
Okay.
The age of 2.
It would have Joseph to be Joseph.
With a J, but I don't know if it's Joseph or Joseph.
Well, it might actually be Joseph.
Forgive my pronunciation.
No, no one forgives it, and we get emails about it anyway.
Constantly, I would imagine.
No.
They were all found struck dead with a mattock on their farm.
With a mattock.
Yeah.
Oh, my phone's ringing. That is wildly unprofessional. Sorry, everyone.
Oh, my Lord.
I'm so sorry.
Big mattock reveal and everything.
I'm so sorry. I am not going to edit that from the episode, by the way.
Oh.
Hey, I'm usually really good. Let me just turn this sucker down. I'm so sorry. The murder with a mattock. Please continue.
Yes.
What if people don't know what a mattock is?
Well, it's also known as a grub axe, I believe.
Yeah.
Grub axe.
Yeah,
a mattock's also grub-axe. Like a... Well, the
it's like
basic,
half pitchfork and like half hoe kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a pointy hoe.
Half a hoe.
Yeah, half a hoe.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. Claire, what are you doing?
Yeah. And then they get saucy every fortnight.
Oh, this is true. All right, continue.
Yeah, so it was 1922. Now, there was a lot of interesting things sort of happening around this event. So there was a lot of like reported oddities. I believe that the father talked about hearing like noises in his house, but he never reported it to police or like accepted anyone's help for it. He just sort of like let it go.
Before the murders?
Yeah, just before the murders. 6 months prior to the attack, the family maid quit. The sort of rumor around it was that she heard strange noises in the attic and believed the house to be haunted.
Oh.
And she didn't want to hang around for that. And Andreas Gruber found a strange newspaper from Munich on the property in March of 1922. He could not remember buying it and initially believed the postman had lost the newspaper.
Okay.
But apparently this was not the case, however, as no one in the vicinity subscribed to the newspaper. So it was a bit of an oddity for it to show up at the farm.
Mm. 1922 was this?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And just days before the murder, Gruber told neighbours that he had discovered tracks fresh in the snow that led from the forest to a broken door in the locked farm's machine room.
Oh, that feels super creepy.
Doesn't it?
From the forest, snow tracks, like human snow tracks, to a
door with a broken lock that goes to their machine room.
Oh, was there tracks going out?
I never found any info on that because I thought the same thing. Was it double tracks or just the one?
Yeah, okay.
Walked out backwards on the same tracks.
That's also an option. Either way, you'd be a bit on edge, I would feel.
One would imagine.
Apparently, also later that night, they heard footsteps in the attic, but Gruber found no one when he searched the building, although he told several people about the alleged observations. He refused offers of help, and the details went unreported to the police.
Okay, that's me out. Sorry, kids, got to move.
Yeah, well, speaking of kids, apparently the seven-year-old told her school friends that she reported that her mother Victoria had fled the farm the night of the act after a violent quarrel only hours later being found in the forest. So a bit of a domestic incident.
Oh, okay. All right. Yep.
So 4 days later, on April 1st, coffee sellers Hans Jurovsky and Eduard Jurovsky arrived at the Hinterkaifeck to take an order. But no one responded to the knocks on the door or at the window. They walked around the yard but found no one. They noticed that the gate to the machine house was open and decided to leave. The seven-year-old was absent from school without an excuse for a few days, and the family failed to show up for Sunday worship. A local mechanic, Albert Hoffner, went to Hinterkaifeck on April 4th to repair an engine. He stated that he had not seen any of the family and heard nothing but the sounds of farm animals and a dog inside the barn. After waiting an hour, he decided to start his repair, which he completed in roughly 4.5 hours.
Okay, so he went there for a pre-booked job.
Yep, and no one was around.
No one answered the door, except for the dog he could hear inside.
Mm, so he's a dog in the barn, so he's just like, well, I'll just get it done and Fokovsky, and then...
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Lorenz Littenbauer.
That's a great name. Yeah.
Great name. Sent his son Johann, 16, and stepson Josef, 9, to Hinterkaifeck to see if they could make contact with the family. When they reported that they had not seen anyone, Littenbauer headed to the farm the same day with Michael Poll, that's an accent mark, so who knows, and Jacob Sigel. Sigel?
That's got to be Jacob. No, it doesn't actually. Where are they? Germany.
Germany. BJ.
Oh.
It's iffy. It's all that Scandinavian stuff.
With a weird afflex. And I said the wrong word, but kept going.
Yeah, so Michael Pohl and Jacob Siegel, as well as Lorenz Littenbauer, went to the farm and entered the barn, where they found the bodies of Andreas Gruber, his wife Gazilia Gruber, their daughter Victoria, and his granddaughter, also named Gazilia. And shortly afterwards, they found the chambermaid, Maria Baumgartner, and the youngest family member, Josef, murdered in the homestead.
Oh.
So four people were found in the barn, murdered, and then two in the house.
Oh, okay.
One of them being a two-year-old child.
Oh, it's a bit steep. Oh, anyway, continue.
Apparently, there were signs that the perpetrators had lived in the house for about 3 days after they committed the murder.
Oh, with the
perpetrator
dead people
or perpetrators, either
still
one.
Still there.
Ooh. Yes.
Well, that's, it's, yeah. Oh, well, we've heard that before.
And so the guy that came to do the work, the perpetrator's still there when he was working? Like,
well, I guess they may have been. Yeah.
Yeah, like there's so many things around this, and especially because so many people were in and out of the property after the murder, and between like the murder and the finding of the family, that there's so much like contamination. Even in back in the day, where the forensics are a bit more basic, but like so much contamination of the scene and what was going on, that it just made it impossible to figure out whomst may have committed it.
It's crazy.
I was looking at how many people they suspected, and there was a lot of suspects. Like even Littenbauer was a suspect.
Oh, really? Oh, the neighbour.
At one stage, yes.
Well, just 1922, when did forensics really kick off? Would have been. I don't know. I don't know, because that podcast you guys did, the last one, they were talking about the earliest with the flies, you know what I mean? The earliest one was way back.
Yeah, like 13th.
Body dating and stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you think about Sherlock Holmes, like he was way into all that sort of stuff, and I guess that was that like the turn of the century?
Yeah, late 1800s. Mm. No, would that make it 1900s?
Late 18 into the early 19.
It would be the late 1800s, but the late 19th century.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I believe it was a year later the farm was demolished, or less than a year. The farm was demolished, and they actually found the mattock hidden in the attic.
Mattock in the attic?
As well as a penknife in the hay barn.
A penknife?
A year later. No one had looked like.
Yeah, I guess somehow they didn't. It was hidden away, and they didn't find it when they were, you know, investigating the property. And then when it was demolished, they found it.
Sure,
that's what I mean about there being a lot of interesting things happening sort of around.
Yeah, okay.
The massacre of this family.
Gosh, so a year later they knocked the house down, and whilst in their preparation for emptying it, that's when they found the stuff.
Yeah, like as they were preparing for demolition, they found the mattock hidden away.
So it wasn't police or anything?
No, just the demolition team, I guess. But I did find some pictures from then.
Okay.
Of, like, some of the family and the mattock being found.
Oh, really?
It's just sort of like...
Wow, all right, well...
I think it's, like, tucked in under the floorboards of the attic, sort of in between where they had, like, the hay for the insulation and then the floorboards of the attic.
Yeah, okay.
Hidden away up there.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, apparently in the hayloft, the police had found some evidence that someone had been living up there.
So they weren't hearing things or anything like that. There was literally someone living upstairs.
Yeah.
But, okay, this obviously raises a ton of questions.
There are so many questions around this.
Wow. That's a great one.
I don't think it was ever really, like, made concrete whether it was one person or multiple people that were involved. Commit this attack?
Yeah.
Well, we think six people. Surely you'd need to be more than one person, or
There's only like, so there's the grandfather, like the grandfather, like the patriarch of the family. He was 63 and his wife was 72. So they're quite old already. Mm. I mean, farmers, they probably still be pretty fit. And then Victoria, who was a 35-year-old woman. So
had to so be more than one.
Tough. Yeah.
Had to be.
Yeah.
German farmers in the 1920s. Are you kidding me?
And mm-hmm. by the sounds of four of them being in the barn and the maid and the youngest child still being in the house, it sounds like they did somehow separate them a bit.
Hmm.
Yeah. Either
like by luring some of them into the barn or forcing them into the barn. Yeah, like there's no, like I couldn't find enough evidence to say which way it went, whether they were lured over there or whether they had forced them to go to the barn.
Mm.
Mysterious.
Oh, that's crazy. Wow. I would love to see those photos.
I'll give you all the links, obviously. But,
yeah. We'll put them up when this episode comes out. When I say we, I think we all know that we mean Seabear.
There was evidence that the 7-year-old, the young girl, had survived for several hours after she'd been attacked.
Nah.
Oh, that's the worst.
I'm hating all of this, by the way. That's awful.
Mm. Yeah. From what I read, it seemed like she was trapped under the bodies of her family and had ripped out some of her own hair.
God.
Yep. That's the pits. If you ask me what the worst is, that's it.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And then the maid and the youngest child murdered in the house. I believe the youngest child, the 2-year-old, was still like in his crib at the time.
Oh, well, fingers crossed it was extremely fast.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yep.
But yeah, there's so much around it that it's just so interesting to read, and the fact that it remained unsolved. I mean, it's not surprising that it remained unsolved because there's so many like conflicting stories around it.
Yeah, and I'll be honest.
Information about like...
If the police didn't even find the murder weapon that was found by a demolition crew, then how hard were the police trying? I'll be really honest. Like, are you kidding me? Absolutely not. If a whole family was murdered, you would literally turn the house upside down and completely empty it. Well, that's what I do, and I'm a professional investigator. That's not true.
But this is also like 1922, so it's like 4 years after the end of World War II. Oh, World War I, sorry. Mm. So Germany's in a bit of a state.
Mm.
But yeah, I'd highly recommend reading more into it if this has intrigued you, because there's so many suspects that they had for it and so many weird things going on like just before that just sort of like ended up becoming sort of talking points locally and then...
All right. Well, we'll put the
information about the case.
Yeah, we'll put the sources on the Discord page, and then people, if they want to click on it, they can just go to that.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'll one of the links has a bunch of photos, which I found super interesting, like the photo of the attic and the photos of the bodies in the barn.
Oh, there's photos of the bodies in the barn. I don't want to see that, and at the same time, I'm definitely going to look at it.
I just found it super weird that like there was evidence of them living in the house. For like 3 days after they killed these people.
Yeah, and obviously probably in the lead up as well, like you were saying, I watched this show on Netflix, I think it was, called Frogging. And that's what it refers to, is people that live in like the walls, in the ceilings, in hidden spaces and, yeah, sneak out at night and steal food or just spy on people. And
Frogging.
Yeah,
Frogging,
a
P-H-R-O.
Oh, the traditional spelling.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I watched a horror movie that was kind of based around frogging.
Mm. I'll never forget Dad telling me a story once. And again, like sometimes he shouldn't tell these stories, especially to me. Like I was living by myself and he's telling me a story about someone who, this woman, she woke up, something woke her up in the middle of the night. She sort of got up, went to the toilet, went back to bed. And then she still felt a bit uneasy and she sort of looked over and there was someone just standing in the corner of her room.
Oh,
just looking at her. Oh, I was just like, I didn't sleep that night after he told me that story.
Oh my gosh.
Sleep paralysis demon things.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Well, thanks for that, Butchie Poodle. That was cool. I'm definitely going to look that stuff up.
Yeah, there's so many things to look at, and there's quite a bit of information. but it's all like so much of it is like hearsay and like local things that people had told others but never reported to the police. And there's so much stuff where people did report some of the stuff to the police, but it never got looked into.
Yeah. Oh, that's frustrating. But you know what? Sometimes that makes layers to an unsolved story. You know what I mean?
So many layers.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, usually at this point, either Claire or I would lay some facts down or who am I or something. But we're both going to jump in here and do different ones together. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
You sure?
Yep.
Okay. I don't think you're ready for this. This is cool. What words does a convicted criminal choose to be their last before they die? Would they ask for forgiveness or tell their families that they miss them? Most probably do. Others, however, have other things to say, and here are some of the strangest last words before executions. So I've actually got a very big list here, but I'm only going to do half, and I'll save the rest for maybe next episode. All right. So, with a father who was a child molester and hung himself in jail, and a mother who abandoned her to the care of her grandparents, Aileen Wuornos.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Childhood was a troubling one. By the age of 12, she was involved in drugs and sex. Later on, she became a prostitute. She started her killing spree in 1989, murdering 7 men. She claimed she killed them out of self-defense, but in the end, she was sentenced to death by lethal injection. The movie Monster was inspired by her life. Her last words, yes. I would just like to say that I'm sailing with the rock and I'll be back, like Independence Day with Jesus, June 6th, like the movie, Big Mothership and all. I'll be back. I'll be back.
Whoa.
Cooked.
That's weird.
Sailing with the rock? Like Dwayne Johnson?
I don't know. I'll read it again.
Independence Day?
Yep. Yes. I would just like to say, I'm sailing with the rock. I'll be back like Independence Day with Jesus, June 6th. Like the movie, Big Mothership and all. I'll be back. I'll be back.
Wow. Did they have her on some meds to kind of keep her calm or something? That...
Oh, C-Bear, I don't know if you know this, but she was fucking crazy.
Yeah. No,
I also realize I can't say that anymore, 2024, but she was fucking crazy. Right. Okay. Let's go with, George Engel, it's German, so Engel was a German immigrant who lost his faith in the political process and joined the International Working People's Association. In 1886, a big rally full of anarchists and labor activists turned violent when a bomb was thrown at the police, killing 7. And although nobody knew who threw it, and Engel was at home playing cards, he was convicted of the murder and went to the gallows.
Wow.
His last words, hooray for anarchy. This is the happiest moment of my life.
Well, okay. That's not what I was expecting.
Anyway, there's got to be a story in that, doesn't there?
I feel like there has to be.
Yep. All right. So on Christmas of 1982, 20-year-old Jimmy Glass and inmate Jimmy Wingo escaped from jail and shot an elderly couple to death while burglarizing their home. Both blamed each other for the crime and both ended up in the electric chair. Jimmy Glass's last words were, quote, I'd rather be fishing. End quote.
All right. Classic.
All right, I'll give you one more. Indicated for the rape and murder of a nun in 1981, Johnny Frank Garrett's execution was a controversial one due to the fact that he was mentally handicapped and only 17 when he was sentenced. He had a horrific childhood and mental health experts once described him as having one of the most virulent histories of abuse and neglect they'd encountered in 28 years of practice. That can't be good. There's a lot of speculation that he was innocent, since the crime was similar to another incident that led back to a detained Cuban refugee, but he was executed nonetheless. His last words: I'd like to thank my family for loving me and taking care of me, and the rest of the world, you can kiss my ass. And that's it.
That's quality.
I've got a bunch more. But kiss my ass was also the last words of which serial killer?
John Wayne Gacy.
John Wayne motherfucking Gacy. That's absolutely right. Well, there you go. Each one of those I've just told you, there's a story in those.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Except for the monster one. Except for Aileen. Yeah, no. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, see Bear, see Dizzle, see Biscuits. It's all over to you. Do you approve of all those nicknames, by the way?
Yeah, they're fine. I haven't heard the Sea Biscuits one, though.
Well, I just made it up.
So, I like it.
Thank you. All right.
Right. So I've got a little compilation of a few different stories. And I kind of came across these when I was researching for the theme of the last itty bitty nitty gritty episode. Mm-hmm. So that was insects. But I ran out of time, so I thought I'd share them with you guys instead.
Mm-hmm.
And seriously, I do hope that this isn't triggering for anyone with phobias, but I think the following scenarios, they will be relatable for a lot of us. So the first story, it was recounted in the West Australian newspaper on January the 2nd, 2019. That morning, a full-blown lights and sirens response from multiple police units was sparked after horrified neighbours reported hearing a toddler screaming and a man shouting death threats. Wanneroo police, they tweeted that a walker in the northern suburb of Edgewater had heard a man shouting, "Why don't you die?" repeatedly. Three high-priority police vehicles were deployed, and minutes later police were relieved to discover no one had been injured in the incident, except an unlucky home-invading spider.
Die with fire. Kill it quickly.
Exactly. So a red-faced Reese Howard admitted he had a serious fear of spiders, and his partner usually killed them, but she was in the shower. And he apologised to police for the inconvenience and thanked the passerby for their concern.
Oh.
Quote, "I'm very embarrassed. It's probably the most embarrassing day of my life, but it's hilarious as well," he said. And Senior Sergeant Simon Hazel told the ABC the episode was a welcome bit of levity in a job that rarely saw the lighter side of life.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it wasn't a serious job and everyone was okay, except for the spider, he said. "It's a huge relief for the officers that they've rocked up and it's a little bit of arachnophobia as opposed to a homicide," he said. "We want to create the SRT, the Spider Reaction Team."
Oh, yeah.
It's created a web of intrigue and everyone's spider senses are on edge.
Oh, yeah, stop.
I could go all day.
No, don't. Get out. Leave
that
the chat.
It reminds me of a video I saw where the police were called to this house because neighbors had reported they could hear like either a child or a woman screaming in the house.
Oh yeah.
And a guy to bring out his parrot to show them that it was a parrot making a screaming and not
it was
a
on
human
Facebook
being.
Yeah, and it was screaming its head
like
off
that.
It was screaming so loud.
So obviously Claire's I have a great fear of spiders. Quick story. Sorry. Butch and I were driving to driving towards Kmart. We're going across a bridge in Launceston. And as we're about halfway across the bridge, I've noticed this huntsman, and it was on the windscreen or on the roof.
It had crawled in the passenger side window and was crawling across the headliner of the car.
Heading towards me.
Heading towards you.
I sped quickly, don't know if I ran a light or not, turned left, and then pulled the car up into
it's
little...
It's like one of the bank of a hill thing.
The side of the bridge thing. Slammed it into park, didn't turn the engine off, and managed to get over the top of Butch. And out the car, what I didn't know is while I was launching myself over, the spider was coming over to my side of the car anyway. It was
moving at the same time you were across the top of the car.
It was absolutely awful.
Oh my God.
I know spiders are a keystone species, but I'll be honest, they all need to fucking die. All of them.
Yeah, you're not alone there, because I do have some more stories for you. I'm not quite finished.
Oh, no.
But it's...
I'm ready. I've got goosebumps. You can't see it.
Oh, no.
That's all right. Keep going.
The next one, this was from The Guardian from November 26, 2015. And again, it was a man. A Sydney man was left quite embarrassed after several neighbours mistook his efforts to kill a spider for a domestic violence incident.
Okay.
It was like 2 a.m. in the morning and police cars rushed to the apartment in the northern suburb of Wollstonecraft, responding to reports of a woman screaming hysterically, a man yelling, "I'm going to kill you, you're dead," and furniture being thrown. A man police described as out of breath and rather flushed answered the door, and the local area command's Facebook page documented the exchange that followed. "Where's your wife?" an officer asked. "I don't have one," the man replied. "Where's your girlfriend?" he pressed. "I don't have one," he said. Police told the man neighbours had heard the screams, the threats to kill. "Come on, mate. What have you done to her?" the officer asked. "It was a spider," the man replied sheepishly, "a really big one." "What about the woman screaming?" "Yeah, sorry, that was me. I really, really hate spiders." And in another incident, September that year, an arachnophobe set a service station in Michigan on fire after he tried to scare a spider away from his petrol tank using a lighter with predictable results. And in another one, an assistant prosecutor in West Virginia found himself in hot water after pulling a gun and threatening to shoot fake spiders arrayed in his office as Halloween decorations.
Oh, fantastic.
And also a woman in the UK called the police to ask them to come to her house and remove a spider for her.
Did they? Is yes, that something they do?
Well, no, it's not one of the services they offer, funnily enough.
Well, they should.
Ben's going to have them on speed dial.
Yeah.
But no, West Yorkshire police urged people to not call 999 unless it was an emergency, and that didn't include eight-legged visitors.
Yep. That's fair enough. Well done.
There you go. Oh, I'm finished. You can relax. That was
funny.
It's
over. All right. That's fine. So if anyone's looking to start a small business, I will be a loyal customer.
Spider removal service. Yeah.
Yeah. That's. Can we just not say the S word much anymore?
Okay. And I promise there will be no images related to anything I've spoken about on social media.
I will literally block everyone.
I wouldn't do that to you.
You know, I had friends who used to share pictures and stuff like that and tag me in it.
No.
And then I made one post saying, "You know what? I know you think it's funny, and I guess on some level it is, but it breaks me on the inside when I see one. So I need you to not do it or I will unfriend you." Like that. And I did, several of them. And now my life's great.
Fair enough.
All right.
We put pictures in Discord. We put them with a little spoiler tag on them and say, "There's a spider," so that you wouldn't have to click them.
Yeah, that's good. It's good, good, good. Well, that was excellent. Thanks for your story, Butch. Claire, that was cool. I actually enjoyed that. Besides,
good.
Dying
I was worried, but I thought you would see the lighter side of it.
No, of course I do. That's excellent. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening, everyone. It's nice to have everyone back together. For the next couple of episodes, we will be without the poodle once more, as he's a busy boy, aren't you? You busy boy.
Yes, work demands me to come in and actually do work for my pay, which is just ridiculous in 2024.
Yeah, I don't understand how I can't get paid to stay at home and look chubby yet handsome. I don't understand how that's not a thing. Isn't that what OnlyFans is? Do you know why I used to call it fans only until I think it was Butch that corrected me and said, "Are you taking the piss?" And I went, "What?" He said, "It's OnlyFans." And I said, "What am I saying? Fans only?"
I just thought you were being clever.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know. But how excitement and shut up.
Ooh.
Yeah. Our wonderful friend Tash is coming in for our first ever guest. She is wonderful, and it's going to be a really good episode, I imagine. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Me too.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to reach out, you can do so at Gmail at tcrimecollective@gmail.com. That's the letter T, crimecollective@gmail.com.
And join us on the Facebook page.
Yeah. I'd love so many more people on there. Claire pointed out the other day that we don't do socials. We only put up episodes, and we're not interactive, and that's a really good point. Like, yeah. I hate it when you're right, but you are absolutely right.
It happens too often, I know, sorry.
It does happen a lot. I should get used to it, really. But she's right. So we're going to be more interactive. We'd love to meet you guys and hang out and do all that kind of stuff. All right, well, thanks for having us. Have a great evening, daytime, whatever you're doing right now, and we'll catch you really soon. All right, we love you. Bye. Kisses. Bye. 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 Kisses. Bye.